This is Jim Inkster. Busy show today. Two state senators will be with us, Democrat Ben Nevers, Republican Robert Attlee. Ben Nevers in studio to talk about his bill regarding Medicaid reform in Louisiana and how it applies to Obamacare, and also a bid to raise the minimum wage in our state. Senator Attlee is not happy with John Berry, who was on this show a few days ago. Senator Attlee is a member of the oil and gas industry and says that his industry is getting a bad rap from the likes of John Berry and Foster Campbell. We'll find out why he believes this. Also on the show, the governor of Arkansas, Mike Beebe, who has successfully steered Medicaid reform through a Republican legislature in his state. And a big announcement from Paul Arrigo of Visit Baton Rouge. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Our guest in studio is Senator Ben Wayne Nevers, the man from Bogalusa. He's been in the legislature since 2000, a state senator since 2004, a Democrat representing Washington, St. Tammany, Tangipahoa parishes. And he is a man who is busy as any lawmaker at the Capitol. And the item that's received most attention prior to the session is your bid to reform Medicaid. You went down this road last year. I recall you appearing before the Baton Rouge Press Club. How's it looking for 2014?
Well, Jim, it's still an uphill battle, but my proposal this year is to allow the people of Louisiana to make the choice. And I think if they are given the opportunity to learn about what the Affordable Care Act can do for Louisiana, and it really doesn't matter to me whether Louisiana citizens call it a gentle care or Romney care or Reagan care or Obamacare. What I'm interested in is trying to provide health care to the many people in our state. Some people ask me as to why I would continue to bring this issue up. And I say a good analogy of that is, why did David take on Goliath? And I say it is because it's the right thing to do. And until it can be proven it's not the right thing to do, I will continue to bring this issue up each year.
Well, the governor is against you on this, so how do you get past that?
Well, the governor's been right about a lot of things, Jim, but he's dead wrong about this issue. It's an issue that affects hundreds of thousands of people in this great state, not only from a health care perspective, but it also creates thousands of jobs in our state and gives an opportunity for the people of this state to have better health care services provided. So I can't imagine us turning away an industry that would create 15,000 good-paying jobs in this state over politics.
How many people are affected by the state not complying with the provisions in Obamacare?
It's estimated that approximately 292,000 people in Louisiana could become insured under the Affordable Care Act. And by not participating, we have tremendous problems, and I would predict that many low-income women will forego recommended breast and cervical cancer screenings, diabetics will forego their medication, and low-income adults will face a greater likelihood of depression, catastrophic medical expenses that all of us pay for today, and I hate to say this, but death. I think many people will lose their lives because we failed to take advantage of federal funding that's available to provide health care for our people, and that is a tremendous tragedy.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757 for Senator Ben Nevers, Democrat from Bogalusa. Inkster Show at WRKF.org if you'd like to pose a question online. The senator saying 292,000 people estimated to be affected by the governor's decision not to embrace the Medicaid provisions in Obamacare. That's about 7% of the state's population. That's a lot of people. At this point, though, it seems that the response has been rather tepid. I don't hear people making this a huge issue, not yet anyway. Will that happen?
Well, I think as people across our state are really educated about this issue and understand the ramifications of not participating, I think you will see an outcry of the people to make this change. And it's unfortunate that 100% of this could be paid for by the federal government for at least the next 2 years. We had an opportunity for it to be paid for 3 years. But I can tell you the estimate that's been given is it would bring billions of dollars to Louisiana. So if you look at it from just a business standpoint alone, it's a great investment. And this constitutional amendment that I would like to provide an opportunity for the people in Louisiana to vote on says that at any time that the federal government was to reduce the federal dollars available to pay for this below 90%, the legislature could decide if they wanted to stay in or get out. So I think there's a safeguard there that protects the people of our state. But I can't imagine us turning our backs on hundreds of thousands of people, Jim, and not providing them the best possible health care we can. And that's my position, and I will continue to fight for these that are less fortunate than many of us.
Well, the fact that you're now crafting this as a constitutional amendment, does that give lawmakers some cover who might not otherwise support it, who might not want to buck the governor on this?
Well, I don't know that it gives them any cover, but I say this. I've never been afraid to allow the people to decide on issues. I believe that each of us are elected to make decisions in many cases, but I can tell you I think the people of Louisiana deserve the right to evaluate this proposal and to make a decision, and I can accept whatever that is. And I believe that once the people understand the true facts about this, and as I said, if the people would prefer or the legislature mm-hmm. would prefer naming it general care, I'm fine with that. What I'm interested in is health care for our people, and I'm willing to fight that battle year after year until such time as at least we give every opportunity for the people to have health care.
The former U.S. Senator from Wyoming, Alan Simpson, says that we ought to call it Elvis Presley care.
Yes, it certainly wouldn't bother me.
297-5633. A question from Faye about where the line is drawn for these 292,000 people. These are people just right over the poverty line, right? Is that basically those are the ones affected?
Well, actually, it would be from 0 to 138% of the federal poverty level. And let me say, unfortunately, because we do not participate, there's a huge hole for anyone that's between 11% and 99.9% of the federal poverty level in this state. It means they're left out. They can't participate in the federal health care exchange. If you're between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level, you at least could participate in the federal health care exchange. But what we've created is a hole that these people that fall within that hole have no opportunity to participate.
You're saying it's from 0 to 138?
The bill that I'm filing or the constitutional amendment would provide insurance or health care services from 0 to 138% of the federal poverty level.
And right now the poverty line for a single person, one person, is $11,490 a year. So that's not a lot of money to make ends meet. And then if it's a family of four, double that, and that's cutting it pretty close as far as the basic necessities of life. So it would seem by extension that these people would have a very difficult time paying for health insurance without some kind of government assistance.
That's correct, Jim, and it's very hard for me to go to church on Sunday morning and sit on a pew beside a person that's a little less fortunate than I that makes minimum wage or even in many cases less than $10 an hour and know that they're struggling to get to work and pay the gasoline cost, the electrical bill, and school supplies for the kids, much mm-hmm. less provide health care for their family. And knowing if they get sick, they're going to the emergency room, and the taxpayers of our state is going to pay the highest cost that we possibly could pay for health care for this hardworking individual. So I'm not opposed to them going to the emergency room, but I think there's a cheaper way to do this and a better way. And I think, you know, expanding Medicaid in this state is one of those opportunities.
Well, Tara asks, is there any guarantee that the state's voters would approve this?
No, sir. There's no guarantee. And certainly I wouldn't ask for a guarantee nationally, but I do trust the voters of this state. Time after time, we've witnessed constitutional amendments placed on the ballot, and you see that the people do understand them and they do read them, and you see some pass and some fail. So what I'm asking of the legislature is to allow the voters to determine this issue.
Governor Jindal is not the only governor in America to not accept this. Several other Republicans have said no. In fact, most have said no. Some have said yes, but the governor is running for president, no question about that, and I don't think he's going to change his mind. There were those a year ago, in fact, former Governor Blanco said he would change his mind. He didn't do it. So are you trying to convince him to change course on this?
Well, certainly I'd love for him to change his mind. As I said, I think he's made the wrong decision. But I can say this. I see some of the Republican leaders across our nation that have led the fight to pass Medicaid expansion, especially in Arkansas, where you had a Democratic governor and a Republican-controlled legislature that passed it. Our governor and others have said that CMS would never approve that plan. And CMS did approve that plan. I look at Michigan, Pennsylvania, and others that are submitting plans now for approval that are totally great opportunities for us to look at. I see Governor Christie in New Jersey, one of the presidential candidates that we will see probably running for president soon. He put his citizens first in New Jersey and put them above party politics and decided that health care was more important in his state than political standings or party standings. And I believe that's what we should do in this state.
You represent a rural district. Is your district affected more adversely by this than others?
Yes. Two of the parishes I represent is very impoverished. Washington and Northern Tangipahoa. I represent some of the wealthiest as well. I represent parts of St. Tammany Parish. But as I said, I think the state voters deserve the right to vote upon this. And listen, Governor Jindal can certainly be opposed to this and continue to be opposed to it. That's his right, and I respect that right. But I can tell you, I also believe that the legislators should allow our people to just simply vote up or down. Some have asked what happens if it fails. Well, nothing happens if it fails. The state still has a right in the future to if they determine they want to participate. But at this juncture, when this program is going to be 100% funded, and it's actually going to save the state general fund over the next 4 years over $300 million, which we could use to shore up our higher educational systems. We could use to implement a universal pre-K program in this state. We could use to shore up mental health programs in our state, which have been devastated. And we could go on about other things we could do with those dollars, pay down on our retirement debt, whatever you'd like to talk about. But I can assure you, I don't think many bankers or many people across this state would throw away $300 million.
You need two-thirds backing in both the House and Senate, correct?
That's correct, Jim.
So you need 26 votes in the Senate and 70 votes in the House. That's hard to do on anything, especially something controversial.
It's very hard to do. But as I said, I didn't run for this office for it to be easy. I feel like that I'm doing the best I can to represent the people that elected me. And I also have a tremendous responsibility to see that those that are less fortunate than many of us have every opportunity to have health care provided to them.
297-5633, your number, back in 90 seconds with Senator Ben Nevers, Democrat from Bogalusa. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A bit more time with Senator Ben Nevers, Democrat from Bogalusa, fighting for Medicaid reform, in which Louisiana, under his proposed constitutional amendment, would fall into line with the provisions that are spelled out under Obamacare. Senator Nevers saying he doesn't mind if we change the name of it to GentleCare. Jenna in Goodwood, you're on with Senator Nevers. Good morning.
Good morning. I have two questions for the senator. One is that they keep saying that this is going to add $1.3 billion in state spending. I'd like for him to explain that. And I also am wondering what his stance is on minimum wage and expanding that.
All right.
Okay, it will add expenditures because we will have additional federal funds coming into the state, and we will have to appropriate those dollars. But let me say today we're paying approximately 62%, or we're receiving approximately 62% of Medicaid funding from the federal government. The state is putting up approximately 38%. If we were to participate in the Affordable Care Act, the federal government would pay 100% for the next 2 years, and when it was first implemented, it would have paid 100% for 3 years. So you can see the huge savings to the state general fund, as well as we move through the Affordable Care Act, you'll see a huge reduction in what we call disproportionate share funding, which will decrease the amount of money that's available to pay for those that cannot pay in our hospital system today, which puts a larger burden upon the hospitals and the taxpayers of our state and those of us that pay health care premiums. Many of us pay higher health care premiums because we have to pay for those folks that cannot pay in our hospital system today. And I think there's a cheaper way to do that by developing a plan. And I'm asking that the Department of Health and Hospital develop this plan. I'm not saying what plan to use. Let's use the Louisiana plan or the Jindal plan.
And what about your minimum wage proposal?
The minimum wage in Louisiana needs to be addressed. We have hundreds of thousands of people that are on minimum wage. And what's really shocking to me is the statistics across this country says that less than 10% of the people making minimum wage are teenagers. Now, you would think that there would be a lot larger percentage than that. But another statistic that's really revealing is that a large percentage of the people on minimum wage work for companies that have more than 100 employees, and many of them are perfectly capable of paying a little bit higher wage. The $9.50 proposal that I have to increase the minimum wage brings a family of three just barely up to the federal poverty level, just barely. And I can tell you that's the least we could do in this state. And I truly believe you see, if you read the bill, you'll find there's exemptions for employers that have less than 50 employees. There's also provisions made that people that are waiters or waitresses or people that rely on tips to make their hourly wage, that it would allow for those tips to be utilized again, and it allowed for the legislature to make exceptions to this law in areas that it would be a deterrent in employees working for employers in our state. And so that's a huge subject. It's going to take quite a while to debate that issue at the legislative level, but I can tell you it's something that needs to happen in Louisiana.
Senator Adley is on deck. Charles on North Foster, you're on the air with Senator Nevers. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you, Senator, for your efforts. I wanted to find out of the members of the legislature who oppose or might oppose your position, how many of them are using the Affordable Care Act to cover their kids in college, and how many of their family members are they using, and how many people who are not covered under Medicaid have you lined up to testify before the House and Senate, because we have over 240,000 of them. I'll hang.
Well, certainly, I'm encouraging anyone that's interested in supporting this legislation to come out, and we plan to try to hear this bill on April the 23rd, the week after Easter. I would hope anyone that's interested in helping with this bill will come forth. As far as numbers of legislators that are covered under the Affordable Care Act, I really don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you I would expect that most of them have an insurance card in their pocket, and that insurance card covers them and their family for health care. But unfortunately, there's at least 292,000 people that we could provide insurance to, and an insurance card just like we have in our pocket, so that they could go and have preventive health care performed, have the appropriate test to prevent them from really becoming a very sick person and a very costly person to treat. And that's what this effort's about. It's to give people hope and also give them the opportunity to keep themselves and their families healthy, and really to become a more healthy employee for us employers, in which I am a small business person and I employ people. And I understand how important it is for my employees that work for me to have insurance, and they do have insurance. So that's the reason I'm fighting so hard for this, is because I believe a healthier Louisiana is a stronger Louisiana.
Well, Senator, we thank you and look forward to following the course in the legislature. It's going to be an interesting session. Good to see you, Senator Ben Nevers. And now we're joined by one of the senator's good friends on the other side of the aisle, Senator Robert Roy Adley. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing well, and I'm sorry to hear that you had to put a pet down yesterday.
It was a bad day. Yeah. My 13-year-old chocolate lab, Bo. He's been a good friend for a long time, but what happens when you have him?
Well, I know you're a man of compassion and a man of passion about what happens in our state. And we had John Berry on this show talking about the lawsuit that he spearheaded when he was a member of the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority East, the suit against the oil and gas industry. You have a different opinion than he regarding the merits of the suit. Let's start with that. Was this a prudent move by the levy board that Mr. Berry was a member of?
Well, I mean, obviously, I disagree. I saw John yesterday. He was at the Capitol. We visited briefly. I shared with him the same thing I'm going to share with you. I disagree with their view. And in principle, the primary reason is pretty simple. When taxpayers or business people or whoever they are, if they do what they're told to do by the government, and then you sue them, that's bad policy. And if you do it by violating laws yourself to get there, by violating public records laws, violating sunshine laws, hiding contracts, concealing documents, then you've really done worse than the people that you're trying to sue. And if you do it under the guise of bad science, that's even worse. So I think this issue is way beyond just oil and gas companies. I think this issue is about business people coming to Louisiana, period, who are told these are the rules, you follow them, and then you being sued. That's the problem.
Well, you have filed some bills related to this. One of them would require a committee to forward three names for people nominated to the levy authority. What was the catalyst for this proposal from you, Senator?
I'm handling three bills for the governor's office on this issue. That's one of them. That bill, they are required to send, under current law, engineers, technical people, I think, one name when they submit. This would take them from one name to three. And then they're required to send, I think it's two names at large, outside specified parishes, increase that from two to three, require that they submit more names than they currently submit, because what happened on this board was that names would be submitted, would be rejected, and then the nominating committee not change the name. And when all of these lawsuits popped up, we actually had a board making these decisions that had 3 to 5 members out of 9 with expired terms. That was not the intent of the law when it passed. It's never been the intent of the law. There should always be some checks and balances. Now, I will tell you, I'm personally open to trying to resolve, meet some middle ground, particularly with the nominating committee, and I have met with a couple of their members already in this process, trying to see if there is not some middle ground on that.
Now, another one of your bills, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, would forbid levy authorities to hire outside counsel without permission of the governor. Is that correct?
I think that's current law. But the governor is trying to pull into one statute, basically codifying all the current pieces that are out there. The attorney general, by law in this state, is prohibited from into contingency fee contracts. The law that created that authority specifically says the attorney general is their attorney. Hence, this contingency fee contract that was entered into was illegal. And the attorney general, in his defense, says, I did that because the law further says when called upon to do so. In other words, you're their attorney when called upon to do so. That language is in the law to keep the attorney general from going out on his own and entering into lawsuits without direction of the authority. It's not an opening of the door for contingency suits. However, if it were, if even that were the law, the attorney general is required by law to review those contracts for those contingency contracts, and portions of those contracts were withheld intentionally by that board, putting them in violation of law one more time.
Dan, downtown, you're on the air with Senator Robert Adley. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Yes, Senator, you say the problem is that the businesses have complied with the law, and it's a problem that now have lawsuits, but isn't the real underlying problem that the businesses have the lobbyists, and they are the ones who are winding down on you and your colleagues, and that's how they get the laws they want?
Your response, Senator?
I was waiting to see if he was finished.
Yeah, he's through.
I mean, I've heard that view, but I have to tell you, let me just give you the counter view to that. This very board and their law firm are paying lobbyists $100,000 apiece for 80 days' work during this session. There are a lot of people who hire lobbyists, but I can tell you the lobbyists do not control, contrary to what you might think. They do provide a lot of information. But if you're going to be fair about it, be sure you recognize who's hiring these lobbyists.
You're saying,
all you got to do is look at the public record, and they're paying $100,000 for 80 days' work.
The Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority East is?
Yeah, well, I say they are. They say they're not because they're doing it through their law firm. Their law firm's paying the money.
John in Lafayette. John, good morning. You're on with Senator Robert Adley.
Right. Good morning, Senator and Jim. I had a short comment and then a question. The comment is that I'm in support of the oil companies on this legacy lawsuit stuff where there's land that has been spoiled by drilling operations, not in the marsh, but on land anywhere in Louisiana. And the companies are sued to clean up the hazardous waste. Now, the current law is, as I understand it, is that the company can pay to get the cleanup done. It may take $10 million, but the landowner can pocket the $10 million, and he doesn't have to clean up his land. And the whole point of the law was to have Louisiana cleaned up. So I think the oil companies are getting a real bad, bad deal from the courts and from the legislature on that issue. On the issue of the marsh, the canals, I think it's just a matter of a question of the law, Senator. Either they complied with the contracts, the permits they got from the state and from the Corps of Engineers, or they didn't. Either they were required to fill up these canals after they finished, or they're not. And that's up to the courts, and I would appreciate your comment on that.
Yeah, and those are two great questions. I think they get to the issue. First, let me hit legacy very quickly for you. Legacy does not stop at the coast. Legacy and legacy lawsuits includes the coast. So the laws that apply to legacy apply to coast just as well as they do on shore. You're correct. The way the law was written, it was allowing people to go sue for damages without repairing the land. I'm actually the guy that passed the law in 2006 and 2012 to correct that, to ensure that the money went to the reparation of the property. Now the other issue about the marsh, look, the marsh is no different than anywhere else. I can tell you where I live. We view our land and our environment just as important to us as people who do in the marsh. And they both have to deal with legacy. And we both have to fix them. Now, here is the issue. Here is a company that has gotten its permits from the state and federal government, complied with law. Now, if you disagree with, if the citizen disagrees with what the government did, your recourse is to the government. It's not against the person who did what he was told to do. That's my whole issue here. I think you're talking about the very fabric of America when you destroy that. When you tell a businessman, you do this, and he does it. Now, I will tell you why they don't backfill the canals based upon what was presented to me and the testimony that we've gotten. That when those canals are dug, once you move that material more than once, it turns to the consistency of sugar. Hence, if you pull it back in, you will wipe out the entire coast. It'll all be gone. When I asked the scientists with this levee board, were they surprised to hear that? They admit, well, yeah, that might be true. So I say, well, what is the science you have then to fix it? They tell me the science they have will be developed while they're in the middle of the lawsuit. You don't want them in the middle of court trying to adopt science or a plan. Now, these lawsuits are about making money. I mean, that's clearly what they are about.
Wouldn't you acknowledge, though, that the oil and gas industry has contributed to the erosion we have on the coast and the problems environmentally that we are encountering right now?
I would agree that the building of the levees caused most of the problem we have on the coast. I would agree that the rising level of the ocean that cannot be controlled. I mean, if you're going to sue somebody, you got to sue God for that. I would say that's part of the problem. It makes logical sense to me that if you open something up and water flows through it, that it creates a problem. But it also makes sense to me if I open something up and I build levees and make them higher than what they were and plant trees and material on top of it, I've actually made it stronger than it was.
All right. Victor in Perkins Place, please be brief. You're on with Senator Adley. Hi, Victor.
Hey, Senator. How you doing? Know me, Victor Marcello?
Yeah, he knows you, Victor.
Yeah, Senator, a couple of things. Let's talk about legacy. Isn't it true that most legacy cases involve enforcement of private contracts? And isn't that really what you're trying to do, is to violate and to limit claims under those private contracts?
We'll get the senator's response
when
we return. We've got to go to a break, but thank you, Victor, and we'll talk about private contracts and more with Senator Robert Adley when we return in 90 short seconds right here on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Senator Robert Adley, longtime lawmaker, former state representative, once a candidate for governor. What about private contracts? The question Victor posed.
The question, as I remember it, dealt with the legacy contracts and private contracts.
Yes.
The law has been very clear. If you have a private contract between you and any company, the legislature nor no one else intervenes in that, of course, unless you're violating a law. What the legacy lawsuits were about were individuals suing for damages, particularly to groundwater, our water aquifers, collecting the money, putting it in their pocket, and not paying for the repair. Our goal was to ensure that when the lawsuits occur, that the money collected went to the repair. That's really where legacy started. The private issue in this coastal case is really critical because I don't think most people even understand this, that 90%, more than 90% of our coast is privately owned. And so when you're out there telling Boudreaux, Gaston, Thibodeau, or Adley, I don't care who it is, this is what you're going to do with your land, I think there's something to be said about the right to own property and property rights. There's this misconception out there that this coast doesn't belong to anybody. It's just all the people of Louisiana, so we go sue somebody over it. That's 90% of it's privately owned stuff. And so that puts us in a position of dealing with private contracts and private individuals.
Well, Senator, it's always good to talk with you, I'm sure.
Let me share one last thought
sure,
with you
go
if
ahead.
I can, Jim.
Certainly.
When I say to you that this is an issue, that's not oil and gas, I just want to give you one example. I shared it with one of my friends as a road contractor who puts asphalt on the highways. Now, we all know there's some bad stuff in asphalt, but he's out there doing it because the government tells him to do it. To sue him 50 years from now, it's just not right. I mean, that's the problem. There are ways to deal with this. We've created the Coastal Protection Authority to do it. This lawsuit is in violation of that plan, hence also illegal.
Well, it will be interesting to follow. It's going to be.
It will be, and thank you for giving me the
well,
time.
Thank you, and let's do it again. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure. We're joined now by Governor Mike Beebe of the great state of Arkansas, former Attorney General, 20 years state senator in the land of opportunity, a Democrat in a state that has gone red like Louisiana. Good morning, Governor Beebe.
Good morning.
Nice to talk with you.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, first of all, how does a Democrat like you survive in a state that has evolved politically, much like Louisiana? It's gone from a solidly Democratic state not so long ago to one that is now largely conservative and Republican.
Well, most of us are conservative Democrats, you know, in the tradition of the South, particularly fiscally conservative. But as far as I'm concerned, my experience is that people of Arkansas will oftentimes default to the party label, particularly on national elections. But on state elections, if they don't know you, they'll depart to whatever the party label is. But if they know you, they'll vote for the person notwithstanding whether there's an R or a D by their name.
Well, in Arkansas, you embrace the Medicaid part of the Obamacare plan, and you did so in a state where you obviously had opposition from Republicans in the legislature. But nonetheless, Arkansas did something Louisiana has not done. How is it working?
Well, it's working well. First of all, you got to understand we had some obstacles that perhaps no other state has. We have a constitutional 75% appropriation requirement, which means that three-fourths of the legislature has to approve it, not just 51%. You couple that with the fact that this is a Republican legislature. It's a heavily Republican Senate, and it's 51-49 Republican in the House. So it took a majority of Republicans and Democrats working together to get this done. But, I mean, I think most of the people in Arkansas, if you ask them to vote on it, they'd vote against Obamacare. And I think most of our legislators would, and I've long said if I was doing it, I would have done it differently. Than I would have attacked costs rather than what they attack. But be that as it may, that's the hand we're dealt with. So not to do it when we're paying for it is just cheating our own people. If we had not expanded Medicaid, we'd be paying for California and New York and everybody else. Our hospitals would be paying for everybody else. Our taxpayers and businesses would be paying for everybody else. And we would just be subsidizing other states and at the expense of our own people. It just economically and pragmatically and from a common sense standpoint, it's just stupid not to have done it.
Well, many in Louisiana share your point of view, but the governor does not. And
I'm not going to get into a political deal about your governor down there. I can just tell you that it made zero common sense for us to be paying for all of this and for our hospitals to be paying for all of this and for our taxpayers to be paying for all this and shipping our hard-earned money to California or New York or Michigan. You know, we got a lot of Republican states now that are trying to do what we did because we didn't just do Medicaid expansion. We carved out something different, and now we're seeing a lot of Republican governors and Republican states across the country wanting to do what we did, and that is to take the federal Medicaid money, but utilize it in the private sector through private insurance. And the feds will, they let us do it, they'll let any state do it, as long as you're still meeting the same population, as long as you're not changing the eligibility criteria. And what that did a number of things for us. Number one, it increased insurance competition in our state across the board because you've got more insurance companies doing it. Secondly, we already have a premium tax on insurance, so we've got an additional fund to help defray the cost that the state will have to bear ultimately in 2017 and beyond. In addition to that, your state's able to save money because there's a significant portion of your existing Medicaid population that in Arkansas we were paying 30% for that can be shifted over to the expansion where you pay 0% for now and at a max 10%. So, I mean, just pure logic and economics, it's just arithmetic. If you just put your pencil to it and if you want to take care of your own people, it's pretty much a no-brainer.
We're visiting with Governor Mike Beebe from the great state of Arkansas. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be brief. You're on with Governor Beebe. Phil.
Good morning, sir, and good morning, Jim. Yeah, thank you. I just want to congratulate you on admitting to be a Democrat on the public airwaves. It's kind of where we're a disappearing bunch here, and liberal is a dirty word in the South. But anyway, a lot of us are very liberal and progressive and supporting exactly what you're talking about, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I would point out that, you know, there are multiple reasons for supporting what we did, what we call the private option. One of which is strictly what the caller talked about, and that sometimes gets lost, and that is you're providing health insurance usually for working people. These aren't a bunch of deadbeats. These are people that are working at jobs that don't carry insurance, and yet they're pretty low-paying jobs. And so for the first time, they've actually got insurance. It actually helps the rest of us who have regular insurance, either through our employers or through private policies, and it helps businesses and companies that are paying for health insurance because it reduces uncompensated care. And I've always said I chaired a hospital board for 10 years, and uncompensated care in a hospital is a hidden tax on the rest of us that are carrying insurance because you have to shift costs. You can't lose money forever without making it up somewhere else, and so hospitals are forced to shift costs, and that increases health care costs on the rest of us that are carrying insurance. This has a positive effect. I would also point out that Gary Herbert is about as conservative a Republican governor as there is in the country in one of the most conservative Republican states. He's figured it out. He doesn't like Obamacare, but if you're going to have it, if you're going to change it in Washington. But if you're going to have it, take care of your own people first. And we've seen that with Republican governors in Iowa and Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania. Haslam's asking me about it now over in Tennessee. I don't know whether they're going to do it because they haven't gone that far yet, but they're talking about it. So, there's what we did here was we passed the savings created by the private option onto the taxpayers by reducing taxes for the same amount. For example, we save $100 million in the state budget by taking the Medicaid expansion for all the reasons I just said, because we lowered uncompensated care to institutions and we moved some people off of regular Medicaid. And by doing all that, we then passed tax cuts, tax reductions, and gave that back to the people in an amount comparable to what we saved with a private option.
Lastly, Governor, you were not born with a silver spoon. My guess is that as a young person, your family might have been one of the families affected by this if this law had been in place.
Oh, yeah. I was raised by a single mother who was a waitress that never finished high school. I came from the other side of the tracks, and this country's been good to me. Obviously, an education was good to me, and I always joke I probably made enough money to be a Republican.
Well, we thank you for joining us today.
You're more than welcome.
Take care. Governor
Bye-bye.
Mike Beebe from Arkansas. And we're joined in our remaining moments by Paul Arrigo of Visit Baton Rouge. Good morning, Paul. Are you there, Mr. Arrigo?
I am here, sir,
okay,
brown-eyed
girl. Well, I know you have a major announcement, a significant announcement for the great city of Baton Rouge. What's going on in Paul Arrigo's world today?
Well, we just made the announcement after it was formally announced earlier today on the day show that the Miss Universe organization has selected Baton Rouge, Louisiana, as the site of the 2014 Miss USA competition here in Baton Rouge.
That's Donald Trump's pageant, isn't it?
That is Donald Trump's own pageant, and we are so excited to be associated with the Trump organization and the fact that we're going to have a major internationally televised media website, social media, just blasting out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, some wonderful things that's going on.
So you had to go and twist Mr. Trump's arm to get him to come to Baton Rouge?
You know, Mr. Trump is he's got what we used to call buffers. We worked through his organization, and there was actually a relationship developed between the organization and Baton Rouge following the Miss Teen pageant. We hosted Miss Teen, as you might recall, in 2005 and did such a superb job following the Miss Teen USA pageant in August of 2005, right before Katrina. Mayor Holden had established a relationship with folks with the Trump organization, and we've maintained that relationship throughout the years, knowing full well that sooner or later they might look at us again for an event. We've because of the mayor's relationship and our relationship back and forth, and the fact that we did such a great job in 2005, I think we managed to put together a plan to bring them to Baton Rouge in 2014, and we're so excited about it. This is a great thing for Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the whole region.
It'll be Sunday, June 8th, the Miss USA competition, broadcast live from Baton Rouge. Where will it be, the River Center?
It will be at the River Center, in the arena, and they've set up the arena. It will be very Hollywoodish looking, like they did for Miss Teen USA, and they're going to showcase this community with some cutaway shots and some shots with the young ladies enjoying themselves throughout the Baton Rouge and Louisiana area.
70 countries and territories
yep.
receive this, so Baton Rouge will be showcased, as will a lot of impressive young women.
Yeah. But you know,
are you a fan of this pageant?
You know, I'm a fan of anything that brings business to this community, and I think that there are going to be millions of people watching the competition on that Sunday night, seeing what a great city Baton Rouge, Louisiana, is.
Well, as you know, these pageants have great fans. That's why they have lasted so long. But then there are others who say this is exploitation.
Exploitation never became an issue with us. We look at every opportunity as a possibility for Baton Rouge. We are an accredited destination marketing organization with several certified executives on my staff, whole certification in various fields. I think people could say the same thing for the NBA All-Star Game, which was held in New Orleans, Super Bowl, fishing tournaments, which will be held in Shreveport. I think that, you know, we look at things that could positively showcase an area, and we think this is an excellent opportunity.
And I would imagine there were many other cities vying for this honor.
Well, let me just say that the last 7 years have been in Las Vegas.
All 7 years?
The last 7 years have been in Las Vegas.
So you got it away from the major tourist hub in the United States.
I would like to think that, yes.
So is there a chance, Paul, that this will be an annual event?
You know, Jim, I wouldn't even want to speculate on bringing this here annually. It's probably something that might want to rotate throughout the country, but The permanent discussion we haven't even had that discussion whatsoever. We think that this is a great opportunity for 14, and it's going to be a great summer.
Well, in less than 3 months, the nation will turn its lonely eyes to Baton Rouge for the Miss USA competition, and Paul Arrigo, I'm sure, will have a front row seat.
Well, you know, we've got the Country Fest on the weekend, 22, 23, 24 May, this a week later. Then a week later, we've got several thousand young soccer players with their regional tournament in Baton Rouge. So it's three back-to-back major events. I think any one of these would be a plum for any city our size. But getting three events like that back-to-back, same year, same time frame, it's off the charts.
Who knows? Maybe Miss Louisiana will win.
Well, you know, we just had the pleasure of having Miss Louisiana with us here at the announcement. She's a lovely young woman from Houma, Louisiana, and I wish her well, and I would love for her to go home with the title, winning it here in her home state, while the whole world sees what a great city Baton Rouge, Louisiana is.
And maybe we'll see Donald Trump in downtown Baton Rouge.
You might see Donald Trump in downtown Baton Rouge, and you never know. You might hear him on your radio show.
I'm all for that. Donald Trump coming to Baton Rouge with the Miss USA competition, broadcast live from the River Center, Sunday, June 8th. Thank you and congratulations, Paul.
My Arrigo, pleasure.
A visit, Baton Rouge, the president and CEO who is crowing today about this accomplishment. We'll be back tomorrow. For J.C. Kane, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.